Namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo, namo myoho renge kyo. Hi friends, thanks for being here, thanks for your practice. Thank you for supporting the Sangha. Whether you've been here for a long time or just recently, or been watching and just recently subscribed, liking and subscribing is your easiest, most efficient way to do a bodhisattva act by using the algorithms that YouTube uses, Google uses, to make us more visible to more people. That grows the Sangha, right? So thank you for that. Hell, or hells. How do you think human beings first came up with the concept of hell? I don't know, I can envision a very early human wielding a rock to do some work and hitting his thumb. Or maybe it was a woman. Maybe it was childbirth. Maybe I just picture somebody going through intense pain, whether it's physical or emotional, and then having to describe that sensation to somebody else. I don't know. Let me know what you think. Suffice it to say, human beings in all of recorded history, and I mean back to cave paintings, have some representation of really horrible experiences. And whether it's ancient Asian writings, interpreted into English language, of course. Dante's levels of hell, right? Hell just isn't a nice condition to be finding ourselves in. Notice I didn't say place, right? Hell isn't a physical realm or place. It's a realm in that it's a realm of the mind. Ah, right? That's what's important to know. We don't go to hell, although you hear that all the time. But in a way, I suppose, figuratively, you could say go to hell. In other words, I send your mind to a horrible place. Be less confusing to say it that way, more realistic, quote unquote. Realistic. It's a real experience, so yeah. So we're going to address that because we see, just like the last one was about heaven, not a place. Let's talk about hell in reference to our modern experience of Buddhism. Not because you need to know what hell is, but when you read translations, it's easy to get misled into the, you know, all the nine hot hells and the seven this and that and all these differentiations of hells. Even in the 10 worlds, there's a world or a realm of hell. But when you go to define it, it has all these other words, right? Because they're all sensations, experiences, emotional. They're contrivances of the mind. Right? So, number one, like heaven, this term is only vaguely useful in Buddhism and should be avoided. But if you understand that you're reading folklore and stories as examples, as indicative of mental experiences, well, then that's fine. Just be clear, right? Number two, the experience of stress, anxiety, pain, or any of the many words to describe samsaric suffering. Because hell, or the hells, whatever their definition, is a samsaric experience. Unless, okay, let's take that apart for a minute. Unless you're actually clinging to something, right? Trying to make it permanent, trying to possess it, trying to own it, trying to define yourself by it. then there's no reason to feel hell. Hell is a byproduct of not wanting to relinquish control, ownership, right? Yeah, but if I hit you in the hand, Sylvain, you're going to feel hell. Well, I'm kind of clinging to the idea that my hand belongs to me, that it is always functional. I know that's stretching a bit, but truthfully, you remember when I was a kid, there was a lot of research, I guess I would call it, a lot of discussion, better yet, of this term that you younger folks may not have even heard of before, is mind over matter. You look that up, mind over matter. It takes myriad forms. But this is what it's about. Can you, with your mind, disconnect from that which is causing you trauma? Can you do it? I'm not saying it's easy. In some instances, sure, it's easy. In others, not so much. That's the division between samsara and awakening. Just consider that. Number three, a mental experience related to the delusional or ignorant state of samsara. There it is again. All right, let's just get into it and see if we can shake this out a little bit more. We hear, we read a lot about the Avicii hell, right? Nietzsche refers to it often at the same time as he refers to the six lower realms or the three evil paths, they're called evil. Why are they evil, right? Remember? They're not evil on their own, right? The world of hunger isn't evil on its own. It's an mental experience, the world of hunger, that completely enraptures you and involves you, engages you in nothing satiating. Why do you need satiation if not for wanting to own, possess, identify, right? That's the whole samsaric caboodle right there. So yeah, it's evil. Why? Because you're so distracted by desire, craving, clinging, that you can't even begin to consider awakening, enlightenment, Buddha-ness. That's why it's, quote, evil, not because it has the characteristic of evilness, it's because it's thwarting your mind's ability, your innate ability, to awaken, right? So evil, another word that we really don't want to use, but if you understand it correctly, you can work with it. I'd rather replace it with something else, right? Obstinate abstractions, right? Obstructions, I mean. Boy, combined two words there. All right, so the Avicii hell, for instance, is a descriptor of our samsaric state of constant stress and anxieties, commonly referred to as sufferings. See samsara and dukkha, right? Shakyamuni taught this very early on. Some people even translate the first noble truth as life is suffering, which is kind of a too much of a shorthand. What Shakyamuni was saying wasn't that life by its very existence is suffering. The samsaric experience, our experience of life, not life, our experience of life is colored, measured, considered, constructed in our minds. And that, in the mind, that is samsara. Not downtown, not the prairies, not the earth, not the universe. Samsara is a mental condition. I don't know if I have that in the definition. I'll have to make that. That's an important distinction, isn't it? When we say we live in samsara, that sounds like, does it have a zip code? No. It's in the way we construct our experience. And isn't that what Buddhism is about? Shut that down and let your mind shine through to see what's actually amazing and happening moment to moment to moment. Got to stop waving my hands. I'll start losing frames here. All right. Let's continue with the entry in the Buddhism reference book. Throughout the centuries of Buddhist teachings and the 50 years of Shakyamuni's teaching life, the verbal traditions of the time and capacity of the people that were raised and constantly programmed into myriad folklore, magical stories, and other mystical influences, a vast collection of Indian, Chinese, and others' hells, were incorporated into teachings to address the capacity of the region's folks. Right? To talk at their level, if you will. It's just the parlance of the region. Wherever Shakyamuni traveled, he liked to speak in plain language, Prakrit, to the most universal way he could, but also to address the people of that region. They had particular stories, folklore, understandings of life that were inculcated from their babyhood, right? Unfortunately, this has led to a great number of erroneous references and misunderstandings of Shakyamuni's teachings, because it's human habit since age immemorial to be literal and to have our own individual understandings, quote unquote, of definitions. For Bob, hell is one thing. For Marianne, it's completely something else. They seem related, but, right, we all have our own. That's why we each have to travel our own path, our own insights, because we all see the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment a little differently. And that makes this practice unique, because the way I get to my Buddhahood, the goal is the same, but the way I get there isn't the exact same way you get there. When you invoke Buddhahood and I invoke Buddhahood, we're both committing the same act with the same goal. But the way our mind gets us there, the way we, quote, transmigrate from our samsaric mind to our awakened mind, that's very individual. It's kind of cool in a way. Within the reduced discussion of the 3,000 realms in a single thought moment of life, the focus on 10 realms or worlds includes one realm of hell. See the 10 worlds. This definition or illustration of the realm of hell is wholly adequate for understanding this term. In other words, if you read the definition provided here. Hell or hells are used to illustrate the vicissitudes of the human sentient mind as it is constantly distracted and unfocused on the amazing opportunity of life in each moment to awaken, yeah? Shakyamuni labeled this constant distraction in many ways and likened the activity in our samsaric mind as monkeys. Remember the monkey mind? Constantly yapping, yelling for our attention, all these different monkeys. Look at me, look at me, look at me. Some of them not so progressive, throwing stuff at you, whatever. It's all distractions constantly going on, right? 3,000 realms in a single thought moment. Monkeys, as anyone having experience with them in the wild will attest, are constantly mischievous, endlessly curious, and never still. To be around monkeys is to be ever vigilant in our own attention and on our guard for whatever may come to occupy our attention. Right? So it's a good analogy Shakyamuni used to demonstrate how our mind, I use the words vicissitudes, because our mind just doesn't settle on anything. It's constantly forming, right? Thoughts, opinions, so on and so forth. In Shakyamuni's example, an entire grove of sal trees is filled with throngs of monkeys, all screaming at us for attention. This is the monkey mind of samsara. That's how our mind behaves in the realm of samsara, the realm, mental realm of samsara. How we experience the world unawakened, unenlightened. Our regular modal of survival, being, so on and so forth. This is like the monkey mind of samsara. Sounds like Super Bowl advertising, yeah? Whenever and however these distractions come to us in our daily life, whether from our cravings or clinging desires or outside influences, quote unquote, all of them within Buddhist thought represent distractions that thwart or take us away from our potential for enlightenment. Every moment we spend distracted is a moment less of our full potential, living of life to the full, the experience of Buddha, see Buddha-ness. In Buddhism, there is no standing still. Therefore, one is either moving forward into enlightenment, toward enlightenment, or regressing into, well, hells or suffering. Right? This is, and that's the entry in the book. The next entry will be Hanuman. People have asked about that because it's in the meditations and it's in writings of Shakyamuni, Nichiren, and so on. But just to end on the hells, this is something Nichiren points out about certain erroneous teachings calling themselves Buddhism, like Zen or branches of Zen or other branches of other schools and non-Buddhist schools that talk about this achieving of stasis as though that is the goal of meditation, for instance, right? To stop thought, like that's even possible. Well, if you look at the 10 realms, the 10 worlds, the world of Nin, or tranquility, right? Sometimes called by certain groups humanity, that's not a good label, but tranquility, or Nin in Japanese, is this state of, we would call it in normal parlance, status quo. Don't change anything. Everything just on hold. Now think as a Buddhist for a moment. If you understand what Buddhism says about the universe, cosmology, life, everything is constantly moving and changing. Nothing stands still. No thing stands still. If it did, the universe would not be expanding. We would not be rotating around the sun. The sun would not be rotating around the galaxy, on and on and on. Everything is in momentum. So to stand still, right? If you're on a boat and it's sailing along or motoring along, and you decide, I'm going to sit still, you're going to be in the water very quickly. And the boat's going to be leaving you behind. Because you can stand still relative to the boat, but it's moving. Right? So the illusion that you're reaching this quiet state of no change is ridiculous. It's actually considered a lower world, an evil, because it's fooling you. It's suffering. It's samsara. Follow? Your life is moving. Are you going to hop on board? moment. Are you going to be a part of the experience of it, of living, being, verbs? Or are you going to think of yourself as sitting still? Because you're not. I don't care how much you close your eyes and relax and breathe and try to, quote, empty your mind. Good luck with that. You're still moving. You're just not doing anything with it. How pathetic. Live it. Don't be a quitter. Right? Why live death, essentially? You're fooling yourself. Your life is still moving. Okay. So, hell. Samsara. Attachment, clinging, desires. It's all samsaric. It's all monkeys screaming. Namo myoho renge kyo. Oh, pushing the monkeys out of the way. Namo myoho renge kyo. Activate the Buddha mind. The Gohonzon mind. You don't shut the mind down. The mind is your entire experience of life. Why would you shut it down? You can't anyway. Anyone who says they do, liar, or deeply confused, let's say it that way. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for your support. Patrons, you are bodhisattva, as I always say. All of you are incredibly important to the practice, the world, and certainly to keep this resource alive. Don't forget, threefoldlotus.com. lulu.com/spotlight/kwoon for the bookstore. I've really fallen in love with the ebooks now through threefoldlotus.com because it's so much, first of all, much less expensive, no shipping. That's gotten out of hand, right? But just donations through PayPal and Patreon, all the videos on Patreon, right? So you can use that as a portal. You can comment there as well. The free podcasts, a lot of you guys like. Listen, just keep your practice strong. Have confidence. Learn to use, by the way, on the homepage of the YouTube channel, there's a video right at the top on how to use this resource. Please refer to that. Watch it. It's not very long, but it'll tell you how to use the search with keywords, because there's so many videos on this channel to try to scroll through them and, you know, who knows, a lot of Nichiren Gosho, you can't tell by the title what's covered in those Gosho, but if you do a keyword search, you're likely to find many avenues of definitions and support for what those terms mean. So use the resource to help you, to encourage you, to answer questions you may have. ThreefoldLaws.com has a page, the core study material page, with like, I don't know, there's probably at least 100 questions there. Typical questions. What does chanting do? How does it work? What is Namo Myoho Renge Kyo? What does it mean? What are the beads for? What? How do they work? Blah, 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 blah. All these typical questions that we have, right? The 10 factors, the 10 words. It's all, there are links, documents you can read or download. Quick study, yeah? Make use of it. All right. I just want to encourage you with your practice. That's the whole mission here. So keep your practice strong. And to do that, monitor your health, right? Your health, your loved ones, your friends, your roommates. Stay healthy. Practice strongly. Savor your practice. It's so precious. Be kind, right? To yourself first. It takes kindness to take care of your own health, yeah? And I'll see you in the next one. Honmon, according to my table of contents here. Bye for now.